Thank you, Marty. I just love her. She's so great. Now it is my privilege to introduce our AA speaker. I know him from, I go to our Tuesday night Coker group over at Coker United Methodist at 7 o'clock. It's Families in Recovery. And I've never heard his story before. And when he shares during a meeting, I enjoy what he has to say. So I asked him to speak, and I'm looking forward to hearing your share coming up. It's Patrick. His name is Patrick.
Hello, everybody. I am Patrick, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Patrick.
My sobriety date is January 29th of 2012. For that, of course, I am grateful. I'm happy to be a sober man. A little over 6 years. And let's see. We're at about 15, 18 minutes. So let's just say that if you're a pessimist, this is 18 minutes of your life you'll never get back. And, if you're an optimist, it's 18 minutes of your life you won't drink. So we're good to go, right? What it was like, what it happened, and what it's like now. I'm 50 years old as of about 3 weeks ago. I'm 50 years old. I was born and raised here in San Antonio. Simple family. I got one brother. Simple family looking at it from the outside. Looking at it from the outside in. Looking at it from the inside out. Not so simple. I've had three last names in my lifetime. All of them before I was 18. I was born with my last name that I was with my birth father. He ran off to Missouri when I was three. My mom remarried. He adopted my brother and I, so it became his last name. And for the next 14 years, it turned out he was a complete jerk, a pedophile, an abuser emotionally, et cetera, et cetera. So when he took off at my 17th year, my brother was off at college then, I didn't want to carry on his name, of course, on the pretense of having children and so forth and so on. So I didn't know my real father anymore, so I took my mom's maiden name. So there's the three names explanation. So needless to say, I grew up a little confused, you know. But there was never any alcoholism in my family, not that I know of. My mom used to drink a lot. My mom and dad went out and did the usual party thing on Friday nights once in a while. Sometimes had people over to do the partying. But nobody ever drank during the day or drank every day or anything. My mom, she had about 3 or 4 years, maybe a little more, where, you know, I'd be woken up on a weekend night where it's 2 o'clock in the morning. She's listening to Graham Funk on the stereo, and you can tell she's having a little more fun than she should by herself. You know, but not quite to the isolated drinking that I was doing later in life. But she weaned herself of that and became a normal drinker. So I can't really say there's any alcoholism in my family that I know of. My natural born father, I don't know. I don't know about the history of there, but. So as far as genetics or anything, I don't know. I think it's just because I grew up a scared kid, to be honest with you. Scared, insecure, very insecure. My brother came out of the womb first. He was 2 years older than me, and I always make a little joke that he took all the good qualities with him, and I got the leftovers, you know? Playing guitar, I couldn't play guitar. David picked it up like nobody's business. Drums, anything musical. He did band, so I did band. But I had to choose the trumpet because I was so untalented, I couldn't do something with both hands at the same time. Trumpet, three fingers, and blow a lot. That's good. I can do that real good. So that was my music thing. But sports, I was always terrible at sports. I was good in football because I could block because I was big, you know. But that's about the best of it. But I grew up really insecure. I was the cliché-ic. Last kid picked in morning basketball, last kid picked in morning football. And although I didn't think it affected me, you know, between that and growing up with my father telling me how dumb I was, how I'd grew up never amounting to anything, just a stupid kid. You know, I've been told in one of my shares in my 6 years, I talked about that, I'm sure, more than once. And after a meeting, somebody told me that, you can't blame your father, you can't do this. And, I'm not blaming him, but what you're told, what you're fed as an adolescent and as a child, it has an effect on you. And it wasn't until I was 43 years old and started getting sober that I realized these things actually did haunt me. I didn't know it, but that's because I drowned in alcohol for 23 years, you know, Dad, my father, he took us fishing, he took us, you know, to the gun range and all the dad stuff. But my point is that what I remember about my father was him telling me I'm stupid, him telling me I'm worth nothing. And these things I ended up in my sober life now realized I believed him, and that was the problem, you know. Along with the fact that, you know, you graduate high school at 320 pounds, nobody wants to date you, every girl wants to be your best friend. I hate friends. I hate girls. Can I just get lucky, please? It didn't happen. Anyway, enough detail there. As far as drinking goes, I didn't turn to alcohol intentionally to solve this problem or anything, but I was on a date when I was 16, and I went to a restaurant. Turns out her family friends owned this restaurant. It was over on I-10. And since we knew the owners, and this girl was 2 years older than me, she was a senior. I was a sophomore at this time. Woo, I was moving up in the world. And we closed down the place, you know, as far as, you know, since they were friends, we were able to stay and hang out socially and everything like that. Well, after that, after the place closed down, this is, you know, 1985, where it's a little more lax and a little less strict as far as the drinking rules and stuff. The owners of this place closed down the bar and brought out the English yards, those things that are, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, they brought those out and they were having competitions, and I had drank maybe once or twice before this. They brought those out. The record was for that bar, the people had like 13 seconds to drink it. I drank the English Yard in 11.3. Finally, something I was good at. Woo-hoo! You know? So, needless to say, I'm not looking at that as my starting point for my drinking, but that's where I found the comfort zone was in drinking. I didn't turn to it, like I said, but obviously, by the evidence of the next 23 years, I obviously liked something about the drinking. I justified it with the fact that all my friends in college went off to college. Everybody was party life. You know, it's in your 20s. It's, you know, 22, 23, 24. It's normal to drink, right? Well, they all graduated, got families, got married, and had kids. And so did I, but didn't have kids by God's terms, not mine. My partying didn't stop. It just continued and continued. So I married a woman that I went to school with and chased after for 11 years, and finally got together with her, and we stayed married. We've got together for 2 years. We've been married and stayed together for 16 years of a marriage. Tried to have kids, spent the tens of thousands of dollars for medical help in that regard, and nothing came through. She blamed my drinking. I blamed her body and whatever else, and it just never worked out. So, throughout those times, of course, there was the countless, if you're the drinker side of this, or if you're on the receiving side of it, Al-Anon, or just married to somebody who drank, then you're on the repetitive, vicious cycle of the four horsemen, you know, misery, everything else that goes with it, and waking up countless times, promising yourself a good quit, promising yourself, and of course, never coming to that time. I would quit for maybe 4 or 5 days at most, but there would be justification for another drink, some kind of party, something going on somewhere. Quite often it was the fact that she'd be complaining because I woke up, and I wouldn't remember, you mentioned blacking out, and I was king blackout, you know. And I got good at lying about my blackouts. In other words, she'd be talking about something like I'm supposed to remember, and I would just play along like I remember it, you know, and hopefully something wasn't supposed to come up that I was supposed to take care of, and anyway, so. But she finally caught on to that after years, and I never understood it, because she would complain about my drinking, but yet later that night or the next night she'd say, let's go out to Margaritaville and get, you know, margaritas and Mexican food or something like that. It's like, well, cool, okay, she's all right, it's time to drink again, okay, cool. Well, I didn't realize that what she meant was go out and have a margarita or two and come home, drink your tea, and go to bed. I took it as a free-for-all. Okay, let's go have our two margaritas and stop and buy a 12-pack on the way home. Oh, and by the way, while you're inside watching TV, I'm going to be right in the garage watching TV, playing with my dogs. And I'm going to also be sipping my Wild Turkey and my Jägermeister that I have kind of stashed in random places, you know? That was normal to me. It was just having more fun that you already wanted to have. You allowed yours. If you're a murderer and you murder one person versus 10, is one worse than the other? No, that was my justification for it. No, I didn't murder anybody. At least not that I know of. Drinking, you know, some people started drinking when they were really early in the years. I didn't start until I was in my upper teens and through my 20s, like I said. Then came 2002, and I got arrested for my first DUI. Slap on the wrist came. Let's go back to my weight situation. I graduated high school at 320 pounds. 7 years later, I got married at 205. In 2009, I was 307 again, on the verge of divorce, and got down to 217 after divorce. Got back up to 265 post legal problems, and now I'm about 220. So you can see the pattern here. You know, I'm all or nothing. I've accepted that in my life, and so how do you deal with that? You know, is what you're going through. But going to the DUIs, my point about the DUI is, I love to eat. Okay, along with drinking, smoking, everything else. And so obviously, when I was really trashed on Independence Day of 2002, and passed out in a Whataburger parking lot. You know, and so my argument to the judge was, who was giving me my nine month sentence of probation. I said, all I did was keep a few people from getting some burgers, Your Honor. You know, no big deal. Well, it's funny. Even the judge laughed when the prosecutor said he passed out in a Whataburger drive-thru. The judge chuckles. I'm sitting there going, shit, I'm facing jail. You know, well, nine months slap on the wrist, no big deal. And I say no big deal compared to what was coming in my future. 2009, it's a Sunday, I'm at a bar with my friends watching football. I drive home, and I'm living about 16 miles from the bar, but it was a particular bar that we used to go to. And I pass out on the highway. And on 410, I bump a truck. It's enough to wake me up, and I gather my thoughts enough to say I need to floor it and get the hell out of here. Something my wife hated about me, I always ran from every trouble I ever created. Instead of being a man and taking it up. So I got arrested for DUI number two, then attempt to evade, causing damage and trying to run from the incident, blah, blah, blah. Got 18 months probation there. This was the divorce was imminent at this point, but hadn't really begun yet. But during my 18-month probation, that's when the divorce came in. I moved out. And I was still on my 18 months probation. I moved out, and I was not drinking at this time because I was trying to be a good boy and realized I maybe have a problem with alcohol. And on June of 2011, I've got my house, bought my house separate from, you know, moved out of my mom and my wife's house. Something about that. Anyway, so I remember thinking specifically, I hadn't been drinking for like 4 or 5 months, being a good boy, and I was thinking, okay, I moved into my new house, everything's in shambles, but it's new, it's fresh. I'm going to go out and get a six-pack of beer tonight. It was a Friday. And I was like, okay, this will be okay. I'm going to drink just tonight. Well, by Saturday morning, I'm thinking, okay, just one more night. By Sunday, I'm saying, okay, now this is the beginning of June. By Sunday, I'm saying, okay, just the month of June. That's it. Just the month of June. I'm going to drink. That's all. And I did. I promised myself that I would, and I did. I did it diligently. I did it well. I passed out in the garage. I passed out in the living room. I passed out in the upstairs. I passed out in the downstairs. It was everywhere. It was fun, though. You know, so I thought. Anyway, I'm on probation, mind you, again, for DUI number two at this point. The last month of June comes up, it's my last weekend to drink, and I get DUI number three. While I was on probation for number two. While I'm out on bond for that, for the next 6-8 months, I wasn't drinking, I was being a good boy again. It got to be January of 2012, and I said it was a bad day at work or whatever. I premeditated my drinking that night again. And I said, you know what, it's Friday, I've been good, I'm just going to go home, be a good boy, clean up the house, play with my dog, do whatever, responsible things, and go to the bar and go to a restaurant and get some nachos and two margaritas. I did that. I did exactly that. I got my nachos, I got two margaritas, and then I stopped by and got a big old beer at the thing. And next to the Exxon where the big old beer was a bar I used to throw darts at when I was 20 years old. Had to stop there and say, see the old, you know, alma mater, if you will. And so anyway, wound up with DUI number four with felony evasion while I was out on bond for number three, which I got while I was on probation for number two. I think I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad I realize I'm an alcoholic. Anyway, time is getting short, so I got 5 years probation for that and home arrest. And I got 10 months of home arrest while I waited trial. I got into the program by suggestion of my attorney. I wasn't forced to. He said the judge is going to lock you up until your trial date because he doesn't trust you anymore not to drink. So we're going to, why don't you go get in rehab? I can talk to the judge and get him not to lock you up if you do that. So I went to rehab, got out, and I said, wow, 30 days without drinking. Holy cow, man, this is great. It's the first time in my adult life it's ever happened. Well, I started continuing going to the meetings because I had an ankle monitor on, beautiful bracelet from the state of Texas County of Barron. That was good. So I started attending meetings. Why? Because it was the only thing I was allowed to do socially. I could do anything related AA and anything AA related, according to the judge, according to the pretrial officer, and so forth. And so I made AA my home. I made the meetings my home. It was great because I was able to get away from my house, you know. And anyway, so I did that for 10 months until my trial date, and I thought I'd work the program to be able to prove to the judge that I was a good boy and didn't deserve to go to prison. I faced 22 years of prison on paper. And he gave me 5 years probation. And, of course, a few other hoops to jump through. That all ended last November, so I've been officially a free man for 5 or 6 months now. It's been wonderful. It was beautiful. But 10 months into the program, I went to court. I got my sentence in 5 years, and I thought I was going to get out and go have a beer. I thought I was going to go out and seek up my friends and my old bar buddies where I used to play pool with and so forth. And I did. I got out of that courthouse. I rejoiced. I went through the process. I went that night and went to a meeting. That's right, a meeting. What did I do the next day? I went to a meeting. I have established a life in Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm very, very happy to be part of. It has shown me a way of living that I didn't know existed. I still deal with demons of my past that I call demons, whether it be by perception or real, you know, I don't know. I'm working on that. You know, in 6 years, I'm just a baby. I'm growing. I'm learning. I'm looking forward to learning more, growing more. I look down here. I know a gentleman here I respect tremendously. We all do. He's got 10 times the amount of sobriety I have. And I think, who am I to say I'm a happy, sober guy? I'm just learning. You know, I am just learning. I've, of course, been relieved from the freedom from the compulsion to drink. There's a little story I'd like to tell. What the program has given me is this. In 2000, back when I was 21 years old, 22 years old, I was working for a bar, and I pulled up to check my schedule. The cook came out and stopped me and said, "Hey, man, you sure look happy." And I remember walking across the parking lot whistling, you know, not thinking about anything, twirling my keys. Yeah, everything's good, tang, blah, 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 and went about that. Fast forward 14, 15 years, I'm in my garage drinking, doing the hiding thing after the drinking with the wife I told you about. And I remember specifically remembering that day and thinking, man, I don't whistle anymore. Because I was whistling across the parking lot. It's for me, this is profound because it means so much. And I remember thinking in my garage how I don't whistle. I don't have that freedom. There's something, some kind of black cloud over me that I'm not aware of, but it's there. And it's keeping me from enjoying my life. Well, I'm in my 10 months of home arrest, waiting trial, 22 possible years in prison, stacked felony DUIs. I've got the world against me. Nobody living with me except my dog. I'm outside mowing my yard, and I'm realizing, holy crap, I'm fucking whistling. I was whistling, mowing my yard. I mean, again, it may sound trivial, but to me it was huge. Because I didn't have the burden. Even though I had such a legal burden coming up that I faced, I didn't know what to expect. I had freedom, a freedom that I didn't know existed. And that's the beauty of this Alcoholics Anonymous program, God as my higher power. This 12 o'clock straight up. My perception of God, I don't know, but I say he for simplicity or explanation, but it may be some divine power. It's some divine power, it's something. It is the universal spirit that animates and binds all things in existence. That's how I define God. Whether it be a white bearded man like a wizard with strings on his finger managing the whole galaxy, I don't know. Beyond, I don't know. But I've turned my will over to him, and I'm here talking to you all today. And I'm very, very happy about that. There was once a man in my group of freedom. I'm going to go over just 35 seconds for forgiving. But it was important. to me then. I was about 6 months sober in my 10 months of home arrest. And I remember thinking, okay, I was 5 months sober, so 5 months not drinking, but I don't really quite get the depth of this program. I don't quite get what am I grabbing onto, you know, what's to hold on to. Well, in my home group, there was a gentleman there, most of you know him, Garland was his name, and he's since passed away. But this was 2012, and he's up at the front of the room. There's 70, 80 people in this room. And he turns around, and he says in his, and most people, I only met the man twice, I don't know him, so forgive me for my impersonation, but he says in his, what I consider a country, hard-working voice, and he says, my name is Garland. I've been sober since 1974. For all you newcomers, I got one thing to tell you. Just keep coming back. Don't leave before the miracle happens. That was enough for me. This man's sitting up here for 38 years he's been sober, and he's telling me at 6 years that there's a miracle in these rooms. I'm living the miracle. Thanks for letting me share.